Okay, so welcome everyone to this week's colloquium. We're very happy to have as our speaker Gil Kalai, who is a mathematician at Hebrew University in Jerusalem. He is very well known to mathematicians for his work on combinatorics with implications for computer science and geometry. He was one of the plenary speakers at the 2018 International Congress of Mathematicians. And then in the 2022 International Congress of Mathematicians, gave the Laudatio for the Fields Medalist Jun He. But to physicists, he's perhaps best known as the most prominent figure who claims to have a technical argument for why quantum computers won't work as advertised. And so he'll explain that to us this week, and hopefully hopefully help some of us non-experts know what to think about that, and hopefully there will be if there are experts in the audience who may have some point that they disagree with, hopefully they'll bring that out, and there can be a clarifying discussion for the rest of us. So anyway, so Gil, thank you so much for agreeing to give the talk, and whenever you're ready, please take it away.
Yeah, thank you very much. I hope you hear me well. It's really great to be in the Perimeter Institute and the sister institution, the University of Waterloo, is one of the fewest places in the world, maybe even the only one, that has a department of combinatorics, which also has close ties to quantum computing. And for full disclosure, I should say that just now the semifinal between France and Morocco starts. So this is a big competition. And I understand anybody who wants to see it in parallel. So let me give an overview. It is a serious possibility that quantum computers are not possible. This is what I expect, and I've been studying this possibility since 2005. The argument for in-principle failure of quantum computers is connected to the mathematical theory of noise stability and noise sensitivity, and it may have a variety of consequences to physics. Recent claims about quantum supremacy, starting with the Google's 2019 announcement, are in tension with my theory. We need to carefully study these claims, and this is a fascinating subject on its own. So here is a quote from Daniel Friedan, and many people express a similar sentiment. Fundamental problem is to reconcile external control with isolation and reversibility. And the message here is that it's fundamentally impossible to reconcile external control with isolation and reversibility. And there are a few caveats, that some of them I will discuss. And this is a physical law which involves also the theory of computation. It's not a mathematical theorem. So I don't have a mathematical theorem that says that quantum computers cannot be built. I offer, based on mathematics, some physics insights based on mathematics and the theory of computation that leads to this conclusion. So let me continue with the overview and tell you the argument against quantum computers. Noisy intermediate scale quantum systems, they are very important, and they are called NISQ systems, represent a low level computational ability that will not allow using them for building quantum error correcting codes that are needed for quantum computation. We have here a two scale situation that in order to build quantum computers in the large scale, we need to build certain gadgets called quantum error correcting codes in the intermediate scale. And in the intermediate scale, the quantum systems are very primitive as far as the computation power is concerned. And this prohibits them from reaching the ability to build quantum error correcting codes and which are needed for the larger scale. So here is some acronym of the laws of physics, how they compose, how they interlace with laws of computation. And there is a very famous thesis called the extended Church-Turing thesis. And the extended Church-Turing thesis, I will explain these notions later, but I just give you a hint, a preview. It asserts that every computation in nature can be simulated efficiently by a Turing machine or by a digital computer. And this thesis is falsified by quantum computers. There is a weaker thesis that is widely accepted on all sides, and it's called the quantum extended Church-Turing thesis. And it says that every computation in nature can efficiently be simulated by a quantum computer. And what I propose, which I gave it the acronym NISQ equal LTP, is that in the intermediate scale, the power of a noisy intermediate scale computation is described by the computational class LDP, low degree polynomial. This is a very, very low level computational class that Guy Kindler and I studied. And this is implied by my analysis. And if it is correct, then I argue that this implies, going back to the extended Church-Turing thesis and not being able to achieve things which are beyond digital. Okay, so this was a preview, and now I want to start from the beginning with a background. What are computers? So you all know what are computers, and I want to present them formally using a model which is called Boolean circuit. It's not identical, but it's closely related to the Turing model. And in a Boolean circuit, the basic memory component in classical computing is a bit, which can have two states, 0 or 1. A computer with n bits, or a circuit with n bits, it has a memory of n bits, and it can perform certain logical operation on them. And there are two logical operations that suffice for all computation, and that those are the NOT gate. This is the operation that take a bit and reverse its value. So it takes 0 to 1 and 1 to 0. And the AND gate, this is a gate acting on 2 bits, and it gives you 1 if and only if both these bits have value 1, and otherwise give you 0. And these two simple gates suffice for the full power of classical computation. And if you don't care about efficient computation, I will explain in the next 3 minutes, then this certainly suffice to describe all the computation in the world, in the universe, in all systems. And if you worry about efficient computation, then there are some delicacies. But it's quite amazing that these two types of operations are sufficient to all the notions of computation that occur in nature. There are certain computational tasks that are very easy to formulate, and even to check whether a suggested answer to them is correct, but which are nonetheless impossible to perform because they require too many computational steps. So for example, if you have a problem with parameter n and you need 2 to the n operation, then when n gets large, I don't know, 500 or 1,000, then there's no hope that you will ever be able to do it. And efficient computation is a theory that was formulated in the 70s, and it requires that the number of computational steps or gates is polynomial in the number of input bits. So this is the notion of efficient circuit. sorry. And this makes a lot of difference. And this is the beginning of the theory of computational complexity that I'll mention in a minute. And now we can make another step, a very nice step, which is to allow probabilistic bits. So a single bit has two possible values, 0 and 1. And it's possible to extend the Boolean circuit model by allowing the bit to have the value 0 with probability p, and the value 1 is probability 1 minus p. And in this way, the classical computer equipped with probabilistic bits can describe a sample from a probability space of sequences of zeros and ones. One of the big insights of computational complexity is that randomness of this kind help to perform computation better. It's not a dramatic or drastic change. It's certainly a drastic conceptual change. This is still something which is not very well understood, but practically a digital computer like your laptop can perform probabilistic or randomized classical computation without any difficulty. And there are also theoretical theorems that support this, this important insight. And now we come to the main topic of our lecture, which is quantum computers or quantum circuits. And here, this is a little bit more complicated model, but not by much. And we need to explain the basic elements, and they are called qubits. I hope I'm not too elementary, but if I am, please bear with me. A qubit is a piece of quantum memory. The state of a qubit is a unit vector in two-dimensional complex space, H equal to C square. There are two basic states for the qubit, and we denote them by ket 0 and ket 1. Those are just the basis for this Hilbert space. And the general state of the qubit is a superposition of these two basic states. Namely, the general state of a qubit is a linear combination of the form Z1 times ket 0 plus Z2 times ket 1. Where Z1 and Z2 are complex numbers satisfying Z1 absolute value square plus Z2 absolute value square is equal to 1. So this is a single qubit. And now, if we have several qubits, gates are unitary transformation. We can put one or two qubits, even more, but we don't need more, through gates representing unitary transformation acting on the corresponding two-dimensional or four-dimensional Hilbert spaces. And as for classical computers, there is a small list of gates sufficient for the full power of quantum computing. So if you look at the IBM quantum computer that you can operate, you can take a tutorial, and then you can actually run quantum circuits on an IBM quantum computer. Open to general use. They have sufficiently many gates for universal computation, and you can run your favorite circuit on this computer. There is one additional operation, which is a measurement. A qubit can be measured when the state of the qubit is Z1 times ket 0 plus Z2 times ket 1, and this qubit is measured, we obtain a probabilistic bit with value 0 with probability Z1 absolute value square, and value 1 with probability Z2 absolute value square. And then the point is that a quantum circuit, the memory of a quantum computer or quantum circuit consists of n qubits, and the state of the computer is a unit vector in the tensor, the nth tensor power of the two-dimensional Hilbert space. So this is a Hilbert space of dimension 2 to the n. And we can put one or two qubits through gates representing unitary transformation and tensor them with the identity on all other Hilbert spaces for the other qubits. And this is our basic operations. And the quantum circuits run several such gates. And then at the end, we can measure the state of k qubits. Can be all the qubits, can be only one qubit, and we get a probability distribution 0-1 vector of length scale. And the big surprise is that this allow, even if you perform these circuits efficiently, a polynomial number of steps, this allow a much richer class of probability distribution that have some notable algorithmic consequences. So in the 1990s, Peter Shor discovered that quantum computers would allow the execution of certain computational tasks hundreds of orders of magnitudes faster than regular computers, and would enable us to break most of current crypto systems and show algorithm is an efficient polynomial time quantum algorithm to factor an n-digit number. And there is another important algorithm from that time that I will not explain, which is Grover algorithm, but I encourage you to study it. And here is the picture of the world of computational complexity. I should say, this is a conjectural picture. It consists of many mathematical conjectures that we cannot prove, but there are some evidence for them. And here are the classes that I think it's good to know, not only if you are a computer scientist, but also if you are a mathematician or physicist. I think this is it's part of our culture by now. We have here the yellow circle. This is polynomial time. This corresponds to algorithmic tasks that require, that can be performed in efficiently, polynomial number of steps in the size of the input. Here, the power, the red eclipse is the queue. This is the task that can be carried out by a quantum computer that runs a polynomial number of gates as a function of the number of qubits. So this is much larger than P. Here you have two famous classes, NP and CoNP. So NP is a very important computational class. And there is a famous conjecture that P is not equal to NP. I will not be able to describe NP formally for you. But I should mention that even quantum computers cannot perform general computation in NP, as far as we know. So on the one hand, quantum computers, they are also limited. They cannot, for all we know, they cannot perform computation NP complete problems, but they extend very far and they can perform certain computations which are beyond what is called the polynomial hierarchy. And one of these examples is boson sampling that I will mention later, and also quantum sampling. So they have sampling power, which is much stronger than a classical computer. And here I mention another task, which is computing permanence. And this is a task which is so difficult. It's very important in computation. Complexity is far beyond the power of both classical computers and quantum. Okay, so this was only a teaser to computational complexity theory. And now we come to noise. And the term noise refers to deviation of the computer from the planned program. And in the case of quantum computer, any unwanted interaction or leakage of information leads to such a deviation. And noisy quantum circuits have the property that there exists a certain level of noise for qubits and gates. And there are some simple way to model it, to add noise to the definition of quantum circuits. And this is also a fascinating area mathematically, physically, but you can just assume that there is some small probability epsilon that every qubit change into maximal entropy state or every gate is only accurate up to this epsilon. And another important notion is noisy intermediate scale quantum computers. So those are simply noisy quantum circuits with at most 200, 500 maybe qubits. So this is what happened in between few tens and very few hundreds of qubits. And I should mention that to build a large quantum computer is a remote task, but there are three concrete aims that people pose as near-term tasks for the development of quantum computers. One of them is to demonstrate what's called the quantum supremacy on random circuits. Those are circuits that are based on randomly choosing the gates with a 50 to 100 qubits. So this was proposed in the meeting around 2015, several groups. I should explain the word, the notion quantum supremacy. Quantum supremacy refers to performing a concrete computational task that it's probably, or by standard conjecture, cannot be performed by classical computers. So this is something that people pose as a realistic task for the near future in the around 2015. And then there is another goal to demonstrate quantum supremacy via another system, which is called a system of non-interacting bosons. This was already proposed in 2012. And a third goal, which is more in the direction of large-scale quantum computer, is to create a distance 5 surface code. This is, I chose a specific quantum error correcting code, which required about 100 qubits using a noise intermediate scale quantum circuit. And my predictions are not just for the long-term goal, but for the very short-term goals. My predictions assert that all these tasks are not possible. We will not be able to demonstrate quantum supremacy. You will not be, not with random quantum circuits and not with boson sampling, and you will not be able to create good quality surface codes. So this is the situation. And here is a cartoon that describes my position. What about the efforts of Google, IBM, Microsoft, Intel, Alibaba, Rigetti, D-Wave, quantum circuits, and so on and so forth. So both in the industry and in the academics, they try to reach very stable qubits and demonstrate quantum supremacy, they will all fail. And I even added the flying elephant that says that when it comes to good quality quantum error correcting code, we cannot even expect a false positive for this task. And as you know, this is something which happening now in 2019, the Google published a claim it was quite a convincing claim that they achieved a quantum supremacy, which was a direct refutation of my theory. And then 3 years later, gradually people realized that at least from the point of view of computation, this was not as good as the hopes, and actually a classical computer can perform such claims fairly easily. And I will talk about these notions in a minute. Okay, so now I move to the second part. I hope this was a good introduction for quantum computers, and it gives some picture. And now I want to describe the argument against quantum computers in some detail, and then I will try to talk a little bit about the mathematics which is involved in this argument, and then we'll move to other things. So the three ingredients of the argument against quantum computer is that the noise levels for NISQ, noise intermediate scale quantum computers, are inherently high. And therefore, such systems cannot demonstrate significant quantum computational advantage, or what's called also quantum supremacy. Such systems cannot be used for the creation of quantum error correcting codes. And on top of that, such systems lead to non-stationary and even chaotic probability distribution. You know, the word chaotic, I use it in my own meaning, which is very strong meaning, that you will not be able even to create probabilistically, to predict probabilistically the distribution. Why is it true that these computers cannot support quantum supremacy? The reason that noisy intermediate scale quantum computer cannot support quantum supremacy is because when we use computational complexity tools, I described to you this ellipses and circle, which is the series of classes of computational complexity. And when we use computational complexity tools to understand the computational power of NIST computers, we discover that they describe a very low level classical computational class. And it's so low level that we don't even need mathematical conjectures to understand it. We can understand it absolutely, unconditionally by some theorems. And this low level computational class does not allow for any complicated computation, much less computational supremacy. So this is the part about quantum supremacy. But what about a good quality quantum error correcting code? It is impossible to build good quality quantum error correcting codes because it requires an even lower noise level than that required for demonstrating quantum supremacy. So the point is that and this, by the way, this is not in dispute. The experimentalist and I think also the theoretician realize that this is the case. The level of noise, the level of control you need to demonstrate quantum supremacy is you need less control than for creating good quality quantum error coding. So, good quality quantum error coding codes are harder than demonstrating quantum supremacy. I think there's more to understand mathematically in this implication, but this is the second part, second pillar of my argument. And this is the place where the argument does not apply to classical computation. Because it's commonly asked if you have an argument why quantum computers cannot work, why is it true? Why is this argument fail for classical computers? And the reason is that the basic classical error correcting codes or fault tolerant method is supported by this very low level computational access. So here comes the distinction between classical computation, quantum computation. This very low level computational abilities in the intermediate scale support classical information, support classical, the rudiment classical error coding code using what's called majority and repetition, and it doesn't support a quantum error coding. So here is another way to describe the situation.
Could I jump into the question here?
Yes,
absolutely. Those statements on the previous slide, those are the fact that low-level class supports classical error correction but not quantum error correction, that is a conjecture of yours, or that is a known fact?
I think the fact that it does not, you see, this is more than a conjecture, supported by mathematical theorems. There is a sort of a general thing is that our theorems that describe computational complexity are asymptotic. And this applies to all of computer science. So I use asymptotic analysis of computational hardness to deduce things about concrete systems with, I don't know, 100 qubits. So this part is not supported by mathematical theory.
Okay, thank you.
I will come back to this. And here about the connection between quantum supremacy and quantum error correcting code, there are some results, there are some experimental experience, and there are some more results that I would be happy to be proven. The fact that this low-level computational class support classical, the basic classical error correcting mechanism, this is a known fact, a known mathematical. Okay, so let me re-describe my argument in terms of the four quantities, alpha, beta, gamma, and delta. Alpha is the rate of noise required by large quantum computers. Here, I didn't describe to you the amazing theory of quantum fault tolerance and the threshold theorem, but there is some constant that if you can reduce the level of noise below this constant, okay, this constant depends on various things, but if you reduce the level of noise to some level, then this allows quantum fault tolerance. Now, beta is the level of noise required for good quality quantum error correcting codes. For example, distance 5 surface code, distance 7 surface code. So this is still not sufficient for full scale quantum fault tolerance, but this is a very good beginning. Gamma is the rate of noise required to demonstrate quantum supremacy. And delta is the lowest realistic rate of noise for quantum circuits in nature. And I claim that alpha, well, everybody agreed that alpha is smaller than beta. I think it's very convincing that beta is smaller than gamma. And I claim that gamma is smaller than delta as a matter of principle. And this is the place where this conflicts with the intuition and with the view of most experts that believe that with sufficient engineering effort, delta can be pushed down to zero. So this is where the crux of the disagreement lies. Yeah, so people are skeptical about that. And maybe 10 years ago, I met a colleague from the Weizmann Institute, Adi Stern, maybe you know him. He said, Gil, if there is a lower limit to the qubit quality, as you say, is it a fundamental constant of nature? I told him, Adi, yes, it is. And if you name this constant after me, make sure to pronounce correctly my name, Kalai, as Latam perfectly pronounced. But most people don't pronounce my name correctly. And even I get used to it. Sometimes when I pronounce my name correctly, they correct me. But I'm not very fanatic about it. Okay, so there is another ingredient to this story, and this is the chaotic noise-sensitive nature of NISQ samples. So if you have a constant level of noise, then NISQ computers are very low-level computationally, but it turns out that there is an additional fact which make it very unreasonable to be able to control them, is that in a whole scale, below the constant level scale, the probability distribution coming from NISQ system will be very noise sensitive. So it will not be possible, even probabilistically, to predict the behavior of the computer, namely the distribution of the samples it produced. This is a prediction from the theory of noise sensitivity, noise stability. I will tell you in a minute a little bit about the mathematics of this. And this says if you have a quantum computer like the one IBM and Google built, even for 10 qubits, and they produce some samples, bit strings, you will not be able to predict the distribution of this bit string, even probabilistically. You will not be able to write a probability distribution that will describe you output. And this is a matter of principle. And this chaotic behavior is caused by high amount of noise sensitivity, namely small fluctuations, the parameters describing the noise will have big effect on the distribution of the samples produced by the computers. And now let me tell you the crux of the debate, which is related to Latham question. I argue that from the point of view of computational complexity, NISQ devices are in fact low-level classical computing devices, and I regard it as strong evidence that engineers will not be able to reach the level of noise required for quantum supremacy and good quality quantum error correcting codes. And others argue that the existence of low-level simulation in the NISQ regime for every fixed level of noise does not have any bearing on the engineering question of reducing the level of noise. And these sharply different views will be tested in the next few years. I think the next 10 years and the $100 billion will bring us closer to that. And now I want to tell you something which is a little bit more technical, but also really wonderful. And this is about noise stability and sensitivity for boson sampling. Here's a quote from LATAM's homepage. Mathematical physics, the two-way field, problems in physics can be precipitate new mathematics to solve them, while new mathematics opens door to understanding the physical universe.
And I'll just jump in to say I don't recognize that quote, but anyway,
I don't know if this is from your Perimeter homepage, but I don't know if this is something you thought about. But
okay, maybe you're right. Sorry, let me not.
But in any case, I also suggest to add the. To add to mathematics and to physics, also the theory of computing, to get a wonderful three-way street. And I want to demonstrate this. I want to describe the mathematical theory of noise sensitivity and stability using the example of boson sampling. Here are the people who are involved in this. So around the late 90s, with Oded Shram and Itai Binyamini, we wrote a paper about noise sensitivity and connection to percolation. Here is a nice book written by Garban and Stack about it. About the same time, also Boris Tsirenson, that many of you may have heard, and Anatoly Vershik wrote a paper on a very related theory. And both these theories had some origin in a work, not so famous work by Wiener, from the 30s, which is about chaos, but it's his theory of chaos, which is quite different than what we usually call now in mathematics chaos. And the application of this theory to quantum computing was done together with Guy Kindler, that you can see him in the top left, in 2014. And the meaning of noise sensitivity, as I see it, maybe I'm repeating here something I already said. There are quantum systems like Google's Sycamore computer with 12 qubits or certain systems non-interacting photons, for which it is impossible as a matter of principle to describe their future behavior, in this case samples, even probabilistically. And now I want to tell you a nice piece of mathematics. And this is about boson sampling. And we start with n by m matrix x with orthonormal rows. So all the rows have norm one and they are all orthogonal. And we want to sample subsets of columns with repetition according to the absolute value squared of the permanence. There is also some constant about the repetition, but never mind that. And this task is referred to as boson sampling. And this was considered in a paper by Trojansky, Lidror Trojansky, and Naftali Tishbi in 1996. And then in a very influential papers by Scott Aronson and Alex Arkhipov from 2010. And this is a very nice computation. But now I want to tell you something. First of all, what is permanence? So permanence is like I don't have a slide on. Permanence are the same thing as determinant without the sign. So you know the definition of the determinant of a 3x3 matrix. You sum over all diagonals and the product of the entries with some sign. If you delete the sign, this is called permanent. So they are also important in mathematics. And determinants are very good classical algorithm to compute determinants. Why is that? Let me ask you, let's test your computational complexity or mathematical. Why is it easy? Why are there efficient algorithms to compute determinants? Because if you look at the definition, in determinant, you have to compute n factorial expression and n factorial products. How can you do it efficiently? The reason you can do it efficiently is because you can apply Gauss elimination. Gauss elimination acts on a matrix and does not change its determinant. And then you can take the matrix, manipulate it, and move it to a diagonal or triangular matrix, and then you just have to compute one term. Okay? So this is one of the miracles of the world. So determinant is easy to compute. Permanents are very difficult to compute. I mentioned it. It's much more difficult than NP complete problems. It cannot be done, not even with quantum computers. Very, very difficult. Now, quantum computers can, now if we, here we don't want to compute permanents. We want to sample according to the absolute value square of the permanent. And as it turned out, quantum computers can perform boson sampling on the nodes. And there is a good theoretical argument by Aronson and Arkhipov that these tasks are well beyond the reach for classical computers. I will not get into this argument. And then, okay, the idea was that maybe, okay, before I tell you the idea, I'll give you an example. Here is a matrix, 2x3 matrix. Boson sampling tells you that you want to sample pairs of columns. Altogether, there are 6 pairs of columns. 1, 1, 1, 2, 1, 3, 2, 2, 2, 3, and 3, 3. If you compute the permanence, absolute value square, you get these probabilities, 0, 1/6, 1/6, 2/6, 0, and 2/6. And this is the boson sampling task for this matrix. A fermion sampling is much easier task, and it uses determinants. And the fact that determinants have a quick classical algorithm also tells you that you can perform this sampling task much quicker. And this is also can be done by classical computers. And here are the answer. Here are the problems. Let me not get too much. And then we with Guy Kindler, we try to study a noisy boson sampling. And we consider a situation where we have a complex Gaussian matrix, a noise matrix. And when we have an input matrix A, we average boson sampling distribution over 1 minus T, square root of 1 minus T times A, which is the signal, plus square root of T of G, which is the noise. And our idea was to expand the outcome in terms of Fermi polynomials. And we noticed that the effect of the noise is exponential decay in terms of the Hermit degree. And the nice thing in this work is that the Hermit, the Fourier Hermit here is Mr. Hermit, the Fourier Hermit expansion for the boson sampling model is beautiful and very simple. And this has led to the following two theorems. When the noise level is constant, distribution given by noisy boson sampling are well approximated by the low degree Fourier-Hermite expansion. Consequently, this distribution can be approximated by bounded depth polynomial size theorems. This is the first theorem. This is the theorem which supports the fact that the noisy sampling task is very easy computation. The second theorem is that when the noise level is larger than 1/n, noisy boson sampling is very sensitive to noise with a vanishing correlation between the noise, Z distribution, and the ideal distribution, and also a vanishing correlation between close by variations of the noise mode. So here is the computational complexity picture. On the left, you see the situation without the noise. P is the polynomial, what can be done efficiently by classical computers. And you see the power of boson sampling, which is huge. It goes beyond the entire polynomial hierarchy, which is the purple ellipse. And on its side, the power of fermion sampling, which is the green ellipse. And inside P, you have a very small computational class, which is called bounded depth computation. And then when you add noise, then everything, both boson sampling and fermion sampling, become very, very tiny computational classes. They belong to what I called, what Guy Kindler and I call LDP, low degree polynomial. This is the gray ellipse, and they are well inside the bounded depth computation. So this is the situation. And now I just want to tell you that those of you who are mathematically oriented, that the Fourier analysis and noise sensitivity in various models and questions, this is a very nice area, both in mathematics, probability theory, the theory of computation, other areas. But I will not elaborate on that. And then the conjecture, the basic conjecture is that what we found about boson sampling applied to all mixtures. This is a conjecture, but it's gradually being proved for various simples. And this tells you the situation that the same situation that we saw for boson and fermion sampling is true in general. If we don't consider noise, then quantum systems have much more power and they go beyond the polynomial hierarchy. But once we introduce noise in the NISQ regime, we are well inside the polynomial hierarchy. And in fact, even inside a tiny part of the polynomial algorithm, which is a bounded depth computation, what we call the low degree polynomial. Now I can tell you the I think I mentioned it, but here is again the acronym we had the extended Church-Turing thesis. This is something which is refuted by quantum computer. This is the quantum extended Church-Turing thesis, which widely agreed. And this is my proposal, which is, this is a computational thesis for the behavior in the intermediate in the intermediate scale. And it said that in the intermediate scale, the power of quantum circuits is low degree polynomial. So this is this gray area here. And if this is correct, this will bring us back to the extended Church-Turing thesis and tells us that we cannot use quantumness to get a better computation. Okay, so part of my study is based on Fourier analysis, but I think I will skip this study about Fourier analysis and also a little bit discussion of Wiener chaos and Lorentz chaos. And I want to briefly, a few minutes, tell you about what other underlying principle and consequences are there from the failure of quantum computers. And here, let me mention one thing, which it represents my work since the mid 2000, since 2005 until about 2012. And there I studied another aspect of quantum computation, which is correlation in the node. And there is a very interesting principle which also reflects the failure of quantum computers, at least partially. And it says that whenever we create cat states on two qubits, they are subject to correlated errors. So we cannot create cat states without noise at all, but when we create cat states, there will always be correlated errors. So I don't want to elaborate in this, but I just want to say that this is well accepted for gated qubits. And the conjecture is that this extends to entanglement, which is achieved in any other way. And this is it's quite obviously true for NISQ systems. And I should say this is part of the effort to understand general mathematical principles which manifest the failure of quantum fault tolerance. And here the principle is that the laws, the stochastic laws for the signals must be similar to the stochastic laws for the noise. And this similarity can be breakdown with quantum fault tolerance, but it's singular this way. So I don't want to elaborate more about that. I want to mention, since it's a well-known tradition to use cats for quantum thought experiments, I want to mention to you some consequences for cats from the theory that quantum fault tolerance is not possible. And when I talk about cats, you can think about a live cat, but you can also think about a quantum evolutions or states with a quantum computer with 10 to 20 qubits. So very small, very simple object. Not one qubit, but small number of qubits. And it will be impossible to teleport the cat. It will be impossible to reverse the time, to reverse time in the life of the cat. It will be impossible to implement the cat on a very different geometry. It will be impossible to superpose the lives of two distinct cats, and the life of the cat cannot be predicted. And again, this prediction about cats applies for medium complexity size a quantum computer. I should say that human imagination allow you to implement cats on very exotic geometries. And here is a picture by Louis Wain that devoted his life to draw pictures of cats. Okay, so now I want to spend 2 minutes to talk about the recent claims of quantum supremacy. And there are claims about progress in all the things that I predicted that they are impossible. In 2019, Google claimed to achieve in 3,300 seconds a assembly task that requires 10,000 years for a supercomputer. So this claim, had it stand, would refute everything I told you today. Not the general thing about quantum computers, but everything original that I told you today. And in 2020, there were similar claims about boson sampling. And regarding distance 5 surface code, there are some progress reported by several. And about the sycamore, I should say that, let me say what happened. So there are two things that happened. One thing is that by now we have much better quantum classical algorithm for many of these tasks. So when it comes to boson sampling, so in the boson sampling case, the people claim that in 300 seconds, they achieved in their boson sampling system something that will require billion years for very strong supercomputer. But it turns out they overlook my work with Guy Tinkler, which gives a classical algorithm for approximating the samples that they achieved. And this was further developed by other researchers. And I think this claims, at least in the magnitude they were made, are very questionable today. And for the Google experiment, also there were huge progress in the classical algorithm, and the running time that they estimated 10,000 years was shortened by a factor of 10 billion. So the supremacy claims are largely refuted, not fully refuted, but largely refuted. And I should mention that there are other aspects of the Google experiments that deserve to be studied. With Yossi Rinot and Tomer Shoham, we are involved in a long-term project to put the Google experiment under scrutiny. We published one paper about statistical aspects of their paper. And there are other concerns regarding the Google experiment. And also, there are some, I would say, very modest, but indication about non-stationarity and perhaps even chaotic nature of the sample that they put. So let me reach the conclusion of the lecture. Understanding noisy quantum systems and potentially even the failure of quantum computers is related to the fascinating mathematics of noise stability and noise sensitivity and its connection to the theory of computing. Exploring this avenue may have important implications to various areas of quantum physics. So, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you very much for the talk. Let's give Gil a round of applause, and then open it up for questions. Raymond.
Hi, very nice talk, and
thank you.
I agree with you that noise in quantum devices is probably the most important things that we have to handle and understand. And on my side, I would think that we have to get kind of control it using quantum error correction. That's where I differ with you. In your goal number 3, you mentioned about surface codes. And there was a very nice experiment in the summer that Google published with a surface code of distance 3 with 17 qubits, another one with a surface code with distance 5 with 49 qubits. And they showed by using the distance 5, they had a slight improvement on the error rate, the effective error rate after you did the quantum error correction. So would that experiment, if it becomes better and then they go to distance 7 and 9, would that sow doubts in your arguments that quantum computers are impossible?
Absolutely. This will kill my argument entirely. If you can do, we were together in a lecture by John Martini in Jerusalem 10 years ago, where he promised something in 1 month. And I think you said this is going to be a long month. absolutely. If you can distance, you see, Google did nice things with distance 3 and distance 5. Still, with distance 5, they didn't improve the quality of the original physical qubits, but they improved the situation compared to the distance 3, which is a nice thing. If Google or somebody else will be able to achieve better and better distance 5, distance 7, this will refute, it's not only shed doubt in my mind, it will refute everything I said. Maybe there will be other skeptics alive, but this will refute. I should say that in general, I should take the claims by the Google AI with a grain of salt. They are very enthusiastic, and one should check very carefully, and this is what we are doing, the quality of their claims. But I'm sure you agree with that too.
Yeah, I agree with you that claims on paper, and certainly the PR ones, are too many in the field of quantum information. And I like your skepticism because it brings people to kind of question all these arguments. I have a second question, which is, at some point you mentioned these alpha, beta, gamma, delta. And yeah, the delta, which is the lowest realistic rate of noise that could be seen for qubits, which you call a constant of nature, which will be named after your name.
This was a joke. Yeah.
Yes, I know. And there, I'm teasing you on that joke. So that.
Okay.
Do we have a number for that value of delta?
That's also an excellent question. And I don't think we have a number. Actually, if you get into the technical details, these parameters, they slightly depend on the architecture of the circuit and on various technical matters. But I think the number, what can be achieved today, so I think if you can push down the quality of today by 2 order of magnitude, then this will kill my conjectures. If you can push it by 1 order of magnitude, then I'm not sure. So there's no wide range of uncertainty. And this is where we stand, yes. But there is a computational complexity argument that you cannot push it down. This is what I try to present.
But when you say a constant of nature, does that mean that a simple quantum system that we would have around could not be probed with a precision which is higher than this delta. And this we have some.
This was, he teased me about this data, and I answered, yeah, I think, but the point is you cannot get, especially even if you look at the cartoon, I think it's better to look at the CNOT gate. You cannot improve the quality of CNOT gates by a large factor compared to today. This is the formal prediction.
Okay.
Good. And I don't mind. Actually, I'm giving you the name of this constant of nature. It can be called the Laflamme.
No. However, I would say maybe that constant of nature would tell us there might be something wrong with quantum mechanics. That could be.
No.
What would happen with quantum computers?
I don't think the failure of quantum computers has anything to do about the failure of quantum mechanics, mm-hmm. in my view. It's just about formalizing. There is nothing. If I have to choose, if you say that it's no, so anything I say has nothing to do with the failure of quantum mechanics. In my view, yes.
I see Lee has his hand up, so I will let him ask questions.
Yes, I'm going to disagree with your claim because I think that if there were a hidden variable theory that disagreed with quantum mechanics at 8 or 10 or 15 N, that would be something like where you would want your number to be. I don't know.
Lee, I don't hear you well.
Let me try. Is that better?
Yes.
Okay. So I want to imagine that there's a quantum system which is not quantum mechanics, which is agrees with quantum mechanics up to something like N atoms and disagrees with quantum mechanics up to beyond that. And I would claim that that would be something like your N. And it's the number of different quantum systems that could be put in one superposition. I'm sorry, my voice isn't.
Okay, I think as I told Ray, I don't think anything I said is in conflict with quantum mechanics. It is in conflict with some perceptions about quantum mechanics. And also there are people who are skeptical about quantum computers who don't even think that this is a fundamental impossibility, but they seem this is a ridiculous engineering task that without we will not learn anything fundamental from it, like Michel Dyakonov expressed this idea and so on. But I present a fairly concrete argument which has to do with the interface between complexity and physics. So and it says something about the interface of between complexity and physics in the intermediate scale, and like we have other conclusion from computation to the way to our limitation, this tells us that in this case, this gives us some bounds on our limitation to improve the quality of two gates and of qubits. So we have here some argument, some wormhole between computational complexity and between this constant, which describes the quality of gates and qubits. And I think it's very nice that this is going to be checked.
May I ask a question about the order of the logic? Do I understand, yes. In response to, this is kind of in response to both Raymond and Lee's questions. So your expectation that a CNOT gate cannot be ever implemented with arbitrarily good precision
Absolutely, yes.
Is that based on the fact that if it could, it would violate your conjecture NISQ equals LDP, or is it based on some other?
Yeah, it will violate.
Is that the
synod gate and the quality of the individual qubit? But yes, essentially, if you can push the quality of this gadget as far as you want, this will violate my conjectures. Absolutely.
And is that not by far
compared to today.
I guess I'm trying to make sure that it's not circular. So is your conjecture that NISQ equals LDP, does that follow from the fact that you can't make the gates arbitrarily accurate? And does your, I'm just worried that you're getting your conjecture from the assumption that the gates can't be made accurate, and then you're arguing that the gates can't be made accurate.
That's a good question. The fact that NISQ is equal to LDP, this is a statement about computational complexity. And this
This
statement is based on mathematical reasoning. The only problem with this question is the interpretation. Because I claim that since NISQ is equal to LDP for every constant level of node, I claim that this has practical implication about the value of C node gate.
So there's an independent reason to think NISQ is equal to LDP. Independent.
Absolutely, NISQ is equal to LDP. Even for the boson sampling case, I even showed you the outline of the algorithm.
So it's just a consequence of if you assume that there's any finite level of noise, you can show.
If you have a finite level of noise, then the noise kill all the high degree Fourier the coefficients, and you are left with the low degree Fourier coefficient, and the low degree Fourier coefficient, they describe this class LDP.
Okay, thanks for the clarification. I see.
And maybe I'll push one more piece in that direction, Leighton, which is, do you have a number for the fidelity, the limitation of the fidelity for the C-naught?
This is a good question. First of all, the logic, the way we work is we try to deduce some quantitative consequences from computational complexity insight. Now, usually computational complexity don't give us precise numbers. You know, for example, that you cannot, it's NP-hard to find a click in a large graph, but when it's going to be failed for 100, for 200, or even to compute the permanent of a N by N matrix is difficult. No one will ever compute a permanent of general 1,000 by 1,000 per matrix. This will be beyond the ability of people, even if one computer will be built. But what is the limit, the precise limit, whether it's 1,000 or 500 or 470, the type of reasoning are far from being strong enough to give. And this is a similar situation. So computational complexity tell you that you will not be able to improve the C-naught indefinitely. And my intuition says that it will fail fairly close to where we are today. You know, there is a famous law, which is like the Moore law, after Rob Shokoff, which says that every 3 years, the fidelity is improved by a factor of 10. So if this law is correct, then I will be refuted in a few years.
If you're thinking about complexity, you think about this, and at some point we'll not be able to improve the fidelity of a C-naught, a bare C-naught between qubits, which I could agree with this, that at some point, if it's 10 to 20,
there is a computational argument that this point is very, the end is very near. So
So if somebody gives you a C naught with a fidelity of 10 to the minus 4, one minus 10 to the minus 4.
I cannot negotiate right now. I don't have the authority to negotiate. You will not be able, look, I tell you, you will not be able to construct a good quality distance 5 surface code and distance 7 surface code. And this requires some quality for the C node and for the qubit. And this will not be able, if I'm correct, this will be a barrier that you will not be able to cross. And we will see. I don't know. What can I say?
So what I'm trying to push is to get a fixed number or an inequality so that then it...
So I tell you, distance 5 surface code.
Okay.
So I tell you, when I heard about the result, the Google result in the summer, this shaked me a little bit.
Okay.
Although I now in the business of checking what Google did in 2019, you know, one have to be cautious.
Absolutely. So
we will see. Yeah, I think this is a nice theory, and you know, maybe it will succeed, maybe not. You know, more people will be happy if I'm wrong.
Well, yeah, so certainly the people who invested in all these companies.
Good. I see Dominic has a question.
Yes. Hi, yeah. I just wanted to see if I understand the argument. I'm certainly not an expert in quantum computing, but you're saying that for boson sampling, that there's some algorithm you can classically simulate it for any fixed noise rate. And that's right. True for, you know, for, I mean, you're saying that that's true for any noise rate, even if the noise rate is like very, very small, right?
Okay. So there is some asymptotic a statement here. If you take the noise rate, then asymptotically there is a polynomial time algorithm, and even in very low level class. But even if you take the what's done in the laboratory, like in this boson sampling group, in that try to implement it, this gives a good algorithm to do what they did. And so this is the story that what I claim is the heuristic part of the claim is that the fact that asymptotically it's very low level computationally means that you will not be able to reduce the level of noise to demonstrate computational miracles, even in the intermediate scale. So the fact that something is asymptotically very low level computationally means that you will not be able to use it to compute a permanent of 500 by 500 matrices, or to do this boson sampling in a way which is beyond the power of classical computers. So this is a heuristic argument, which is very common to the way we use computational complexity all the time. This is the way we always prove things asymptotically, and we always try to draw practical conclusion from these asymptotic insights.
Right, but there's a result that you have to contend with, which is that, the threshold theorem says that if the noise rate is low enough, then it's not classically simulable, right? So you're saying that therefore the noise rate must be high, but I'm trying to understand how this works in boson sampling.
Yeah, so this is a good question. The threshold theorem tells you if the noise rate is small enough, then you, and it should be much smaller than what is needed for a distance 5 surface code, then you can do fault-tolerant quantum computing. And I tell you, okay, but if the noise rate is not so small, but still small, you will be able to exhibit in the intermediate scale computation that nobody can exhibit in a classic computer. And this is unreasonable because the asymptotic power of this noise in intermediate scale quantum computers is very, very low. So it's like you show me some physical device that involves no quantum and nothing and tell me I can compute with this permanent if I can reduce the noise. So my conclusion will be you cannot reduce the noise.
But
so
to be clear,
this is the way to apply. But the important thing is that there is a two-stage argument. You need a two-scale reasoning. You need to look what happened in the intermediate scale. In the intermediate scale, you cannot use the threshold theorem. In the intermediate scale, you need to build the quantum error correcting codes themselves. And if you cannot do it in the intermediate scale, there's no hope in the larger scale. Of course, there are also some competing ideas to go directly to the quantum error correcting codes, for example, topological quantum computing. So you need some variant of this argument. But
it seems like the threshold theorem is precisely saying that if you can do it in the intermediate scale with a low enough error rate, then you can do it in every scale.
That's right. And my argument says that you cannot do it in the intermediate scale. Because if you could do it in the intermediate scale, then you could also exhibit a superior computation in the intermediate scale without any quantum fault tolerance. And this is not possible because in the intermediate scale, your devices are primitive from computational complexity. They are not they don't have any quantum powers. They are just primitive classical computers.
Sorry, so are you saying that the threshold theorem is wrong, that there is some...
No. The threshold theorem is a mathematical theorem. There's nothing wrong with it. The threshold theorem tells you that if the level of noise is small enough, then you can scale it to any scale. And the question is what happened in the intermediate scale. In the intermediate scale, the threshold theorem tells you nothing. You cannot use the threshold theorem to do computation in the intermediate scale. In the intermediate scale, you have to control the device with your bare hand and to use your best engineering. And then there is an argument, a computational theoretic argument, which tells you that you cannot do it in the intermediate scale. So you cannot reach the level required for the threshold theorem. And certainly, and even you cannot reach much milder requirement that is needed for what's called the quantum supremacy. Lee.
Yes, let me try it again from a different side. Supposing I want to build a hidden variable theory, and I want it to look different from quantum mechanics if I involve greater than n systems. Is that n playing the same role as the complexity number? That is, what I need to do to, I can imagine a quantum system which is built on small quantum systems, somewhat larger, and starts to fail on a fold level. And is that the same thing that you're talking
about? I don't think so, but I'm not sure. I don't think I understand what you said. I think there is some insight that people have that everything that they can write, any type of quantum mechanical evolution that they can describe, can also be implemented. So this is not part of quantum mechanics, but this is part of some view that everything, every abstraction comes from the very fundamental series. So I don't know, but as far as I can see, we have here an argument based on the noise level of the intermediate scale, which is based on the very ordinary modeling of noise in the way computer scientists model quantum noise from the beginning. So I see that Debbie raised her hand. Debbie?
Yes, thank you for taking the question or the comment. I'm a little concerned about bringing in NISQ in the discussion. I worry that it is a distraction from the important questions here. To me, the important question is, what is delta? As a physicist, I think that is the biggest question I have. What is the fundamental low noise level we can physically achieve? Now, if this number is high, I think quantum mechanics as a mathematical theory is just five axioms for quantum mechanics. do not describe our physical world. And that I also disagree that it has something, it certainly has something to do with whether quantum mechanics is a correct physical theory or not. If delta is big, I don't think quantum mechanics should be considered as a physical theory without modification.
Okay, so this is, I think in some spirit, this is similar to Lee's point of view. I don't agree, but I think I'm studying the matters in the same formalism and models as done by computation, by people who study quantum computations. And I don't agree that I don't see any reason. I don't agree. There are, if you look at my work, I try to see. So delta, for example, I try to lower, to bound the minimum level of noise from some parameters of the quantum system. And you see, if we are talking about for example, if we are talking about a non-time-dependent quantum system, then the fact that it's time-dependent requires some intervention from the outside. So just so essentially, one way to think about it, that whenever you have a time-dependent a system, and the quantum computer is very time-dependent because you need to be able to operate the different gates in any arbitrary order, then this requires intervention from the outside. And I claim this requires a lower bound on the level of noise. And I don't think this is in any way contradicting quantum mechanics. It is contradicting the way people think about quantum mechanics, or many people think about quantum mechanics in the era of quantum computers. But I don't think, as far as I understand, but maybe we can discuss it, I don't think it's a contradiction to quantum mechanics. So I think it's sort of a red herring to regard this computational argument as a contradiction to quantum mechanics. You know, if I tell you that you will not be able to build a quantum device that compute permanent, so this should not shatter your belief in quantum mechanics. So these systems are very they I think it's a good exercise to try to understand what are the mathematical principles. For example, one principle which I think is that the noise is bounded by some degree of uncommutativity of the operators which are involved in the evolution. So if you have a quantum evolution which is time dependent, and there are some non-commutativity in the various unitaries, then there is some lower bound on the noise, which depends on this measures of uncommutativity of the operator. So this just tells you that systems that are controlled from the outside must be noisy. This is not a new insight. It's just a quantified way to describe the well-known insight that I mentioned actually in the beginning of the talk. If you want to control it, you cannot isolate it from the rest of the world. If you don't want to control it, then it will not be time dependent.
But I assume that a physical theory, the whole purpose of having a physical theory is to predict what are experimental outcomes.
Yeah.
If the concern about how big delta is, if delta is large, then the way we think about quantum mechanics does not even lead us to a confident conclusion whether we can perform certain rather simple argument. Like the predicting power of quantum mechanics as a mathematical theory would be so utterly limited that
I think
we should not even stick to, I just can't see how we can stay with using quantum mechanics as a physical theory without modification.
I don't think there is anything that quantum mechanics predict now which is violated by this fact that the noise level for this type of systems is large. But it's true that if your intuition about quantum mechanics is that the sycamore computer on 9 qubits can be predicted at least probabilistically, then this insight is probably incorrect. So
yeah,
this
I'll let other people,
but I don't think this contradicts quantum mechanics.
Yeah, I'll let other people take their chance, but I really do think that the very intermediate complexity thinking or the very current experiment seem to distract from the actual more fundamental question here.
Okay, so this is possible. I mean, I've been distracted toward the NISQ systems and quantum supremacy because this was the way things developed, and my earlier work was trying to find the mathematical principles that manifest the failure of quantum fault tolerance. And now I've been even more distracted to study the statistics of the Google experiment. And this is the way, so I'll be happy to be distracted by your comment, but probably I need you to elaborate it further and to think about whether this has anything so drastic to say about quantum physics.
Yep, thanks for taking the comment.
So I hope we can continue this discussion also with, I should say I'm very happy to see you face to face, not in the ideal situation, but still it's face to face, yeah.
Okay, why don't we have a last question from Dominic?
Yeah, I just wanted to come back to this point. So I can consider two hypothetical universes. In universe A, it evolves under quantum mechanics, and the noise rate is like 10 to the minus 20 or something tiny below the threshold theorem. And then there's universe B, in which there's a higher lower bound on the noise rate, which is you want to claim that we're in universe B. But universe A is something we can consider at least hypothetically. I don't see how these arguments you presented about boson
set. The noise rate refers to quantum circuits that can perform sequences of gates, non-commuting unitaries, in a very, very wild way. So it doesn't apply to, I don't know, to the hydrogen atom or something like that. So
okay, fine. By universe, I mean like a universe in which everything is quantum circuits.
Quantum circuits are very specific quantum systems. But I claim that we live in universe B. I don't remember what was A and B, but universe B.
But the arguments you presented about boson sampling, I don't see how they can apply to you. They cannot apply in universe A, because then it would...
No, they only say that there is a strong computational theoretic argument. So this is an argument which is in the interface between computational complexity and physics and mathematics, that tells you that we live in the universe where delta is large.
I mean, I'm missing where the fact that you're in universe A, not universe B, is entering into your arguments, because it has to enter, because otherwise it leads to a contradiction.
Wait, so just remind me, what is my series, what universe it is?
Sorry, your theory is universe B, and universe A is the one with a small
Universe A is the fact, the thing that disturbed me about universe A is that in universe A, you can describe primitive computational systems that compute superior computation. And my universe, very basic axiom for my universe, is that primitive computational system cannot compute superior computations. So this is an axiom that excludes universe A.
I'm not sure I understand, but thank you very much.
Yeah, I just say that in my universe, computational complexity insights have consequences even for small scale systems. And this conjecture has consequences, and the consequences we live in universe B.
Maybe just to ask it one more time, what so if you were in universe A, so you could build gates with very low noise below the threshold theorem, then why wouldn't the small NISQ scale devices with such quiet gates satisfy all the necessary properties for the threshold theorem to then tell you you could do fancier things with them?
If you could, yes, absolutely. If it's correct, yeah. So if you live in a world where you can have CNOT gate of very good quality, then you will be able to apply the threshold theorem. And even before you apply the threshold theorem, you will be able to build a distance 7 surface code. And even before you will be able to build distance 7 surface code, you will be able to make computations with very small number of qubits that are beyond the power of classical computers. And this ability is in conflict with a very basic insight in computational complexity. And this insight is that if you have a system which is primitive computationally in the asymptotic sense, then you will not be able to make a superior computation. This is an insight. It is a heuristic insight. This is the way we apply computational complexity to understand the world around us. And maybe it's not true, but we don't have a counterexample as far as I know. And this will be a counterexample. This will be very primitive computing system. It's nothing to do with quantum or classic. It is computationally, it's completely classic, that enable you to make superior computation. This is something that we cannot expect, at least according to me, but this is not convincing to many people who work on this theory. This is the argument, and we will see. It has a very counterintuitive consequence that you will not be able to improve the CNOT gates.
Okay. Well, thanks. Let's thank Gil one more time for a very stimulating talk.
Yeah, thank you all for coming, and great to see you. I think this is the first time I saw Lee in person. So,
thank
you, Gil. Yes. Bye.
Thank you, Gil.
Bye-bye. Bye.